Yep. We are on page 117, 118 in the Hebrew. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom. Shnei mine nachas ruach. In the English, for there are two kinds of gratification. Last paragraph. Okay? We're talking about a person who, he says, shouldn't get depressed, that he's having all kinds of thoughts of doing things wrong. And on the contrary, he should be happy about it, because perhaps this is the reason why he was created, was to fulfill the mitzvah of V'lo sasa ru acharei levavachem acharei nechem, do not stray after your heart and after your eyes. And on the contrary, the fact that he would be getting depressed is because he's being a bit arrogant and not recognizing that he is not a tzaddik, and he should not be despondent that he will never be able to vanquish the Yetzer Hara, the animal soul, because maybe this is why he was created, was in, to endure with this battle constantly for 120 years.
Plus or minus 10 minutes.
And he says, but the tzaddikim, they don't have a war, and so you're not a tzaddik. But as she says, Hashem has two types of pleasures. Okay, what are they? They're similar to the two types of tastes that to which people are attracted.
Yes.
Okay, what type of taste, Shlomo, are you attracted to? Just generally. I'm asking you just...
What's the question?
Excuse me. What type of taste attracts you?
In what respect?
As far as you like to eat it. Is it type, not specific food? Just general...
Sweet, salt, bitter, sour?
Aha. I never thought of it.
Never thought about it. Yeah. Okay. She's like, are you a pickle guy or a chocolate guy? That's usually the way it goes down. So...
I don't have a sweet tooth in general.
Okay, so there are different things. People like sweet, and then people like generally spicy or bitter,
right,
sourish type tastes.
Right.
Okay, pickles versus chocolate.
Yes.
So he says that tzaddikim and the beinonim are like two different tastes. Okay, a tzaddik, he's going to say, is like sweet, because what do you have to do to make what do you have to do to make sugar taste sweet?
Nothing.
It just is sweet.
Right.
Okay? Now, we have this stuff called chrein marer, horseradish root. Right. We eat it on Pesach.
Yes.
Okay? What do you have to do to make that really edible? You know, you have this foul experience that we have if you're lucky enough to get a good root, that sticking just plain, biting into a chaw of horseradish is... a wretched experience.
Indeed.
I mean, your stomach will say, I don't want this in there, and you'll begin heaving from eating a real good chrein root.
Right.
Okay, but what happens if you take it, you mix it with a little bit of beets, a little bit of vinegar, a little bit of salt, maybe some lemon juice.
Right.
Okay, you put it on a piece of fish, and then you put it into your mouth, and your sinuses like open up, and the tears start coming up, and you go, ah, I'm a chaya.
Yeah, that's
delicious.
Yes.
Okay, what is it? People are masochistic over here?
Indeed.
No, it's just there's two different the pleasure sensors in the brain say, hey, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. But what's the difference is what did you have to do is you had to fix it. You had to do something to the chrein. As an aside, a very interesting thing, which one day I will try this. I have to try it.
Okay.
The Alter Rebbe, when he was first incarcerated, had requested kosher food. And they didn't give him kosher food. Every time he made a request, they said, you're the prisoner and we're the guards. Okay, you have to listen to us, not we have to listen to you. And he, the Alter Rebbe, therefore, if they were going to bring kosher food, wouldn't eat.
Right.
And so after 4 days, it was the protocol says that if a prisoner doesn't eat after 4 days, this is declared a hunger strike and he has to be force-fed. Okay, so four big burly Cossacks come into his cell with food and they pin him down and there's a whole struggle. And He's like screaming with his mouth closed, but he can't open his mouth. And the head interrogator came walking by and saw what was going on. He says, "What's going on over here?" And he said, the guards, you know, like kudzu attraction, he said, "He hasn't eaten in 4 days, and protocol says that after 4 days we have to force feed him." So he turns to the interrogator, turns to the Rebbe and says, "Why are you on a hunger strike? You're most likely going to be vindicated. There's no reason for you not to eat." And he said, "You are not supplying me kosher food, and therefore I cannot eat." So the interrogator said, "Will you trust me to bring in kosher food?" Which is a valid question, because there's all kinds of problems. You know, you're the with mashkiach, sure, with sure. The meat, you know, basar nelem min ha'ayim, dagim nelem min ha'ayim, you know, kosher cheese, these type of things, all kinds of things over here. So he also said, you specifically, I will trust to bring it in because you asked. Okay. Wow. But he said, so where are we supposed to get your kosher food? This is Moscow. Moscow was pretty much Judenrein. Not too many Jews. But he said, I happen to have a chassid and who lives in the city, and he can make the food for me. And so he went to him and said, there's a prisoner over here, and there's a whole thing about that they exchange notes underneath the food, passing it back and forth the time that he was
in. Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, so his alter was able to get information, but he said, I haven't eaten in 4 days, and my stomach is very weak, and I'm afraid if I'm just going to put regular food into it, that I won't be able to stomach it. So he said, so what do you want to eat first thing? So he said, listen to this, after not eating for 4 days, he said, I want to eat chorein sautéed in honey.
Interesting.
Because that will strengthen my stomach. Okay, so one of these days I'm going to try it. Crane sauteed in honey. Crane,
in that context, crane just meant the root, right?
Yeah, the root. We're not talking making a salad over here. The Rebbe explains. Shnei minyanim nachas ruach lefanav yisborach lamaila. Echad, mibitl hasitra achir legamrei. When we nullify the forces of evil completely, these habcha memarira lemetikai, umachashecha unahera al yedei tzaddikim, and when it gets converted from bitterness to sweetness, and darkness to light through the tzaddikim, vashenis kadaskafi sitra achra ba'edib betokva ugvarasi, and the other one is to controlling the sitra achra when it is still in its strength. And its might. We talked about before in chapter 10, the power of his habcha of a tzaddik. That a tzaddik has the ability of converting something which derives its nurture from shalosh klipas atameis, from the forces of evil, and to make it into something holy, which was the thing that got Shabtai Tzvi in trouble. Because Shabtai Tzvi maintained that chaylev was kosher. You know, he could do it. He made chaylev, forbidden fat, which is punishable by karas. He said it's now for permitted, because he could do that, because he was a big tzaddik and he could make things, you know, permitted.
Yeah, don't try.
Whereas we're talking about things of like conversion, so there's a story about the Alter Rebbe with Napoleon's March, which you're familiar with, that he took Napoleon's March and turned it into a niggun. And so it was no longer supplying a chayas to Napoleon's troops. It was now a Lubavitcher Niggun. Okay, that type of drawing out the spark of energy which is contained in the forces of evil. Because, if you're recalling, the forces of evil are also created by God.
Sure.
And they contain...
Lubavitcher?
Pardon?
Shabtai Tzvi was a Lubavitcher?
No. Not at all.
Not at all.
He wanted to be, but he didn't know. Now, when the times got tough, he went got gone.
Nature,
yeah. So no.
Is that like where the Chazal like got rid of Avodah Zarah? Like they.
That was more of a mevatel. This we're talking about something which is incorporated into holiness, taking a Napoleon's March and making it a niggun. Is taking something which was a nurturer to forces of evil, and have it now become vested in Kedusha. In other words, because the forces of evil...
It was Klipas Nogah, right?
I would think so.
Music. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's music. It's not right. something which is not...
Right.
It's not chaylev.
No.
Nobody that I know has ever come and said, listen, this thing which was usa deraisa is now no longer... Uh-huh. Is now you can elevate it to holiness. Yeah. We haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. You have a spoon there. You can use that too.
Shake becomes kosher.
Yeah, Mashiach will come and we'll talk about that.
Yeah, that's...
Okay. So, the... but when you're talking about something like music, you know, so you're talking about Goyish music and, you know, Goyish philosophies, et cetera, et cetera. So this type of stuff is a thing that can be incorporated into holiness. The reason being is that the godliness that enlivens it is a spark of holiness, which is in Gullus, in that thing.
Right.
And that tzaddik has the ability of breaking through the shell of the klippa.
Right.
And extracting the holiness.
Right.
Whereas Joe Average Bainany, what can he do? He can't do that.
Stay away.
He can do is he can control himself. That the Sitra Achra still remains in its might like at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's lifting itself up like an eagle. Meshamar Diyu Hashem, and from there Hashem causes it to descend. Will be Sarusa Dilatata, with an arousal from below. Meaning, with this person becoming excited and doing just a little bit, Al Yedei HaBeinonim, through the Beinonim. Okay, so since I mentioned the someone brought up in a class I had last week after this one, it was like on Wednesday I had a class, and they mentioned, they says, Rabbi Finman, you know that 5-second rule to holiness that you have? You know, my deal is if you, it takes 5 seconds to get to holiness. You've never heard this one, Shalema? If you, if there's something that you open up the fridge, and your eyes go, ooh, I want that. You now have 5 seconds. Fill in the blank. Why do I need to eat that? If you can't come up with an answer, then don't eat it. But and you have to do it in such a way that you can't fool yourself. So this person said, then what will happen then? If you come up with a reason why I need to eat this to somehow serve Hashem better, you're a holy person. And all it took was 5 seconds. Okay, so... a person says to me, she says, I don't know if you made it better or worse, because what happens? I open up the fridge and I see something I want to eat, and I think 5 seconds, do I need it? I say, nah, I don't really need to eat that, but I eat it anyway. So is it worse? So you might have a point there. So, Vizesha Amar HaKasa Va'asili Matanim Ka'ashera Hafti. This is what the verse says, make for me delicacies that I like. This is a statement that Isaac said to Esau, excuse me, when he was about to bless him. Okay, he wanted venison. Okay, which I wouldn't mind. Hey, why don't you start raising deer in your backyard if you're going to do stuff? I mean, you know, so they get a little limited. They get a little bit ornery back there. You know,
yeah, the space is a little limited.
So the matamim lashon rabim. It says delicacies in the plural. Shnei minei nachas ruach. Two types of pleasures. And it says, this is an interesting thing, is the way that this is interpreted is a switch, and it's always bothered me. But who maimer ashkina levaneha klalas yisrael, it appears, but tukunim. The Zohar explains that this statement of make for me delicacies is the Shekhinah, the divine presence, talking to the Jewish people. But Pshat and Pasuk is that it's Esav, Yitzchak talking to Esav.
Right.
So here in that analogy, Esav is analogous of the Jewish people.
Right.
Which is really weird. Okay, if it would be that he would said to Yaakov, make me delicacies that I love. Or if Rivka said, your father said that he wants delicacies that he loves, but she doesn't say that. She just says, here's a goat. Mm. Okay, so the, but it doesn't. And what's the, so how is it that Esav can be an analogy?
He had his chance with Dina
for the Jewish people. So this is one possible thing. Is there's a medrash that talks in last week's parsha's Vayechi, that talks about what happened when Yaakov's coffin got to Israel, that they got to Ma'ariv Machpelah, and Esav said, you can't bury him in Ma'ariv Machpelah because there were two spots. Yaakov gets one and I get the other one. Yaakov put Leah in there, and so he used up his spot, and the one spot that's left is mine. And so they said to him, you sold it with the birthright. And he said, you got any proof? And he says, we have a signed contract. He said, okay, show me. He said, it's down in Egypt. He says, I can wait. So in the meantime, Dan had a son whose name was Hushim. He was his only son, and he was deaf. And he didn't understand what was going on, what was the delay in burying Yaakov. So they tried to explain to him about the whole thing with contracts and Esav, and all he got out of the deal was is that Esav was holding up
the
funeral. So he took a sword and lopped off Esav's head. This is what you call dispute resolution theory.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and it says in the Medrash, this is where it gets really weird, that Esav's head rolled onto Yaakov's lap.
Yes.
And Yaakov picked himself up and looked at it and smiled and then laid himself back down again. Yeah. I told you it was weird. And so they decided that because they saw Father Jack do that, that they're going to bury Esav's head in Ma'ariz HaMachpelah on the lap of Yaakov. Okay, so then Chassidus talks about this idea of the head being in the lap. It says the lap is what is where your strength is. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you ever have to do anything, if you know anything about any type of things with strength, so the strength is really in your hips.
Right.
Okay, if you ever engage in any type of pugilistic activity, for example, if you ever had any coaching, so you don't punch with your arm, you just don't throw out your arm, but you throw your whole body in it, just putting in the basically forcing that behind the arm, you put your hip into it, because your strength is down here, not up here. Okay? Whereas the head is the intelligence. So where's the head of Esav? The head of Esav is, which is the highest part of Esav, is sitting in and being controlled by, dominated by, the strength of Yaakov.
Right.
Which Yaakov was a pushover, by the way, just in a simple level. At age 63, he picked up a rock that took a whole bunch of shepherds to pick up.
Right.
And he did it just to show off.
Right.
This is quite clearly, why did he pick up the rock by himself? He could have asked other guys, Joe, come on, I'll help him move the rock. No, he picked up the rock himself. Why? He wanted to impress the girl.
Yes, he did.
So,
And it worked.
And
romancing the stone.
So this thing that we call, we use the analogy of Esav now, it could very well be then that we're talking about the head of Esav, which is like in Yaakov's lap. Right. We're talking about the that bit of holiness, which is even in Esav, which is a very little bit, and was all extracted because we see that when Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to invite the nations of the world to petition to be included in the coming of Mashiach. Mm-hmm. That they should also come along. Mm-hmm. Hashem is very magnanimous and, you know, equal opportunity. Mm-hmm. So the first nation that comes, of course, is the greatest nation ever in the histories of the annals of history, is Rome, which is Esav.
Right.
And they come and they present themselves and say, we deserve to be included. Right. And Hashem says, or Mashiach says, I don't remember what the Medrash says over there, that, what did you do? What makes you so great? So the Romans say, we made concrete. We built marketplaces and theaters and circuses.
Okay.
And we amassed large amounts of gold. Until this day, by the way, if you want to get anything done in concrete, you have to go ask an Italian. They're still in control over concrete. It's just the way it is.
Interesting.
Okay. I had my driveway done the first week of November. And I had two Jewish contractors tell me it's too late, you can't get concrete. I called up one Italian guy, he says, I'll have it for you tomorrow. Okay, so you want concrete, you got to deal with Italians. So Mashiach answers back, why did you invent concrete and what did you do make concrete for in order to pave roads so you could ease your conquest of the world?
Right.
What did you make marketplaces and theaters and circuses for? Prostitution. And you amassed gold and silver? The verse says, Li hakesef li hazahav. God says, gold is mine and silver is mine. So Hashem said, okay, I'm going to give you some. There's no big kunst in that. That's nothing. You, Rome, don't get to come.
Mm-hmm.
Which indicates that what? That all of the good that the Romans may have accomplished has already been purified. To such an extent that they don't get to come with the, they don't get to come with Mashiach.
What do you mean it's been purified?
Meaning that this whole business with Yaakov and the head took out any good that Esav had. Mm. And that's already been done. The fact that his head is sitting in Myers and Machpelah is enough of a payback for all the things that he did. Okay? So the point is that there are two types of delicacies. That Hashem likes. Hashem likes when tzaddikim are tzaddikim, and Hashem likes when beinanim are beinanim.
Indeed.
And which one does he like better? Well, which do you like better, chocolate brownies or pickles? You know, it depends.
Right.
It's not a better situation.
Right.
You have the first. You have two types of physical pleasures. One is that they're sweet. Things are chomutzim. You have things that are sharp or bitter. But they get fixed and prepared well. Until they become delights that arouse or return. The spirit, like when you say you put something in your mouth that's like that chrein that's burning in the back of your head, and you say mechaya. What does the word mechaya mean? In Yiddish, mechaya means a pleasure. In Hebrew, the word mechaya means something which enlivens.
Yes.
From the word chai. Okay, so he says that this thing which was bitter and now has been fixed up is something which is a mechaya. It gives a person life. Okay, so which does Hashem like better, tzaddikim or beinanim? I don't know if you can answer that question. Okay, but being that beinanim are compared to the chrein,
yeah.
So no one ever put anything sweet in their mouth and said, ah, machaya. They said delicious, but not, you know, it doesn't revoke the same response.
Hmm.
Okay, nice piece of chocolate cake, for example. You don't put it in and go, oh, machayat, no. Okay, there has to be some kind of something where there's like an action or something. The other time that people say, ah, machayat is when they get into hot water. Okay, yeah. And when does it become a machayat? Is when it's about 110, 112 degrees, when it's just below the burning point.
Mm-hmm.
Then people say, ah, this is good, I like this.
Mm.
Okay, if it's 99 degrees, it's like, ugh, disgusting.
Yeah. Indeed.
You know, it's
what about
be
when you have a nice cold drink on a hot day?
A nice cold drink on a hot day.
I've seen people say, oh, it's Machiah.
A Machiah. Pretty good, no? So, there's something there. The back of their throat's getting frozen off. There's got to be, you know.
Indeed.
The pain sensors and the pleasure sensors in our brain are very closely related to each other.
They are indeed.
Vizeshika Omer HaKasav. Call Paul Asher Lemenehu Vegam Rasha Liyem Ra. This is also what it says that Hashem has made everything for his sake, and also the wicked to the day of his evil. Pirish, She Yashiv Mirasha Vyasa Harasha Liyem. What the Alter Rebbe is doing at this point is zeroing in. Vigam rashal yaim ra, and the wicked person will take the evil and make it day.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way he's fetching the verse.
I see. Yeah.
Meaning
wow.
That when the forces of evil are subjugated, and you have the glory of Hashem is elevated throughout all worlds. What has happened now is the darkness, which is normally associated with the Russia with the wicked, now itself shines.
It's a light, right.
Yeah. It becomes a light. And this is based on the idea that, for example, it says that a person, he said before, And chapter 7, that a person who does tshuva from ahava, a person who returns back to God because he feels a love and wants to have a relationship with Hashem. So then, zdainas nasa like hizachios, his intentional sins become merits. It's the same thing, because it was the fact that a person felt so far away, this acts now, and now that he feels that he's far away, this will act as a springboard to drive him and propel him closer. And he'll get closer to Hashem than somebody who never went away, because somebody who never went away always felt that closeness. He doesn't have anything to springboard him to get closer. He's just on this flat relationship with God. So the Russia now has he's saying over here, what is he accomplishing? Is he did things wrong. And he brought blackness into the world. But when he corrects the situation, then what happens? The blackness turns to a greater light than the light.
Yeah.
Okay? As it says about the... you know, when Mashiach comes, the moon will be as bright as the sun, and the sun will be as bright as the light of the 6 days of creation. You know, and it says like the Laila Kiyayim Yair, that the night will shine like day.
Right.
Meaning that the forces of evil will no longer be a contradiction to holiness, but a conveyor of holiness. And you don't have to wait for Mashiach for that. All the person has to do is tshuva. And then that happens too. V'lo ad elan, furthermore, afilu b'dvarim ha'maturim legamri. When you're talking about, for example, totally, completely permissible things. Koma sha'adam zayveach yitzro afilu sha'akala. How if a person, he uses the expression, sacrifices his Yetzirah. Okay? However much it is a sacrifice.
Even for only for a while.
And even just for a little bit.
Yeah. For permitted pleasures.
For permitted pleasures.
This answers your question about a minute ago about the guy with the 5 seconds.
Yes.
Okay, so the other times he looked in the refrigerator, I want that, and he grabbed it. The fact that he contemplated it for 5 seconds.
Okay.
Is he okay. Spent the 5 seconds?
The 5 seconds. The Kavala Sitra Achra.
Right.
And his intention was to do this.
That's when you're eating with Hashem.
To right.
Then you're right.
Okay. So it says. Well, let me take a digression over here. It says we talk about self-sacrifice, Mesiras Nefesh.
We have my times. Go on.
They say, before I sit down and teach, I have to go back and listen to all the shirim that I taught. And I could just say, instead of me going into it, and I said, go back and listen to what I said in chapter whatever on the website. And that way we could save time. But anyway, so just as there are 5 levels of the neshama, there's nefesh, ruach, and neshama, chaya, and yechida. I remember talking about this. I don't remember where, like chapter 10 or 11 or somewhere around there, 12.
Yeah.
Okay, so to also that each one of the 5 levels of the neshama has a specific purpose. Yechida is the plug in, the connection to God, and chaya is a person's desires and wants, and neshama is their thoughts, ruach is their emotions and their speech, and nefesh is the actions. Okay, so we have this thing called Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh is translated self-sacrifice, martyrdom. However you'd like to translate Mesiras Nefesh. Literally, it means giving over the soul.
Right.
So, we normally think Mesiras Nefesh, we think of martyrdom.
Dying, yeah.
Dying. A person, the greatest thing that a person could do is that he could die for the cause of Judaism. Rabbi Akiva, his whole life, said, when am I going to die like a martyr? And the Beis Yosef was supposed to die a martyr, but for some reason he blew it, and instead, as a consolation prize, he got given the ability to write the Shulchan Aruch, which is the way the halacha is followed. And dying as a martyr is even greater than writing Shulchan Aruch. Okay, so I don't recommend martyrdom at home, folks. No, don't try this at home.
You don't often live through it.
But do we have a Mesiras Nefesh? Mesiras Nefesh means that I'm giving up myself for the cause.
That's correct.
So when a person sees something And this is not trivializing. This is not making it trite. We're not taking, I'm not taking away from previous generations of people who were burned to death and gassed and et cetera and et cetera. I'm not taking that away from them. But what is that? Anyway, but there is something to it. Doesn't it's we're not doing nothing.
Right.
You know, Baruch Hashem, we don't have to walk around with armbands or red hats and live in ghettos and are restricted in our movements or occupations and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And we still have Mesiras Nefesh. And our Mesiras Nefesh is, I'm not going to eat that right now. We're not, it's not a Mesiras Nefesh at the level of Yechida.
Right.
Because it's not demanded of us, Baruch Hashem. It's a Mesiras Nefesh, the level of Chaya. I really want to,
right.
But I'm not going to.
Right.
And so he says that even if a person, martyrdom yechid, you can only do once. You can't do it a little bit. But Mesiras HaRatzayim, when a person is going to say, I don't want to, he can do it all day long. And he can suddenly say, you know, and any time a person does something good,
they
did a good thing, you can't take that away from them. Oh, it was only just for 5 seconds. Okay. No, they did something good. It's like when I used to tell ladies about lighting Shabbos candles. But Rabbi, I watch television on Friday night. So good, no? Light the candles on top of the TV.
Right.
Just leave them there. Watch them burn on top of the television as you're watching television. Because when you're doing something good, it doesn't take away from the fact that he did something not good later.
Yeah. Right.
So this, that the person has an intention. Okay, he uses the expression zaveach yitzray. The word zaveach is used specifically for sacrifices.
Yeah.
Okay, as a carbon, he's using it as a means of getting closer to Hashem. He only did it for 10 minutes. He went past the chocolate ice cream once. He said, I don't need it. Went past it a second time. I don't need it. Third time, he said, okay, I'm eating it now.
Yeah.
Okay, and at that point, couldn't control himself. The first two times still count. Afilu shakal miskavenly skafia sitra achra shebecholos tmoli, and his intention is to subvert the sitra achra, which is in his left ventricle. Kegain shechavas leechol and ma'achra suudasa ad la'achra sha upachas vayisik b'terah vayisik sha. Like, for example, he's hungry, he wants to eat, but instead he says, "I'm in charge over here." And so I'm going to eat an hour later. Kidisa b'gemara sharevi is Michael kol adam, as is explained in the Gemara. A normal person eats at 10 o'clock in the morning. Shashish is Michael talmidei chachamim, but talmidei chachamim wait till noon. V'hayim arivin atzmam shtei shois lekavana zu, and they starve themselves for 2 hours with this intention. Meaning, I'm in control. I really want to eat now at 10 o'clock. Everybody's sitting down to eat. But I'm going to sacrifice my Yetzirah, and I'm going to focus on learning Torah and to show that I'm the boss for 2 hours. Even though it wasn't to say, okay, now that I've eaten, I got to go to work. No, because these guys, after they got through eating, what did they do? They learned. Did it really matter quantitatively as to how much they were going to learn that day if they ate at 10 o'clock for 20 minutes or if they ate at 12 noon for half an hour? 20 minutes? No. It had nothing to do with that. They still learned till whatever they learned till.
Right, right.
The hours were on the clock were the same. But now they were doing something in addition to their learning is by the saying that I am controlling myself, that I'm going not to eat now simply because I want to eat. So then this causes the Sitra Achra to be subdued. And the glory of God to be elevated throughout the world. Now I heard recently someone say to me that if you really want to break your Yetzihara, you should eat things that you don't like. Don't eat things that you like.
Eat things that you don't like.
Yeah. Don't dwell on it too much, because I told them you're an absolute idiot. That's no way of controlling your Yetzirah. All you're doing is making yourself miserable. You're not accomplishing anything.
Right.
Okay, there's a story, the first cook in Lubavitcher Yeshiva. The Rebbe Rashab set up Lubavitcher Yeshiva in 1894, 1896, I don't remember exactly. And the Friedrich Rebbe at that time was 17 years old, and he was made the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the Manal. He was in charge of the physical plant of the Yeshiva. And he hired a cook. This cook knew about cooking. They came to him and asked him, just as an aside, they came to him and said to him, could you make soft-boiled eggs? So he said, fine. So he comes to breakfast the next day and it's hard-boiled eggs. So he said, could you make soft-boiled eggs? He said, sure, I'll make soft-boiled eggs. They come the next day and it's all hard-boiled eggs. He says, could you make soft-boiled eggs? The third day they come back, it's all hard-boiled eggs. He says, why don't you want to make soft-boiled eggs? He says, I cook them, they don't get soft. Okay, this is the type of cook this guy was. Okay, so this guy makes, it got to the point, the Bachram complained that for lunch this guy used to make a soup which was absolutely dreadful. It was unpalatable. It was like you could not put this stuff in your mouth. And they complained to the Friedrich Rebbe, who at the time was 17 years old. Mm. And he called in the cook and said, what's doing? Why do you make such terrible food? And he said, I'm teaching the Bachram how to do a scaffi. I'm teaching them how to control themselves. So the Friedrich Rebbe said, that's my job. Your job is to give them from what they should control themselves.
Indeed, yes.
Okay? So the idea that a person during the, he said, on Shabbos you could eat what you want. Madami, well, you know, kol matamim v'zvuchulva. Shabbos, during the week though, you should eat food that you don't like. That's ridiculous. Mm. That's the same thing like every day I'm going, you know, because I want to control myself, I'm going to hit myself in the head with a hammer. You know, that doesn't accomplish anything. It's like, that's moronic.
Same thing when the priests would like flog themselves.
Yeah, it's like, that's not a Jewish thing. It sounds just so foreign. Eat things I don't like to control myself. You're not controlling yourself. By doing that, that's not exhibiting control. Because what happens is as a person gets something that they like, well, see, now that guy becomes a ravenous glutton. The whole week he's eating Brussels sprouts and liver. And now, do you like Brussels sprouts and liver? You could take them, you could leave them. Okay, those are my examples. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Artichoke and turkey gizzards.
Yeah, yeah, and so. Okay. And now all of a sudden he's got a nice piece of roasted chicken. So the whole week I've been eating Brussels sprouts and liver. And here's this delicious piece of chicken. How's he going to eat it? He's going to eat it like a pig.
Yeah.
He's just going to woof it down.
Right.
Because the whole week he's been living depraved.
Yeah.
Okay? That's not going to do it.
Right.
So. The Canaan also. This one's really tough for me. So too also, if a person doesn't say everything, it pops into his head. From, piece of gossip. To tell a joke.
Yeah.
You know, one-liner. I really want to tell you this one-liner, and everybody's going to laugh. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
Okay? But why am I doing it? Am I doing it to serve Hashem? Or am I doing it to serve me? Is it self-serving?
True.
So that if it's self-serving, it's animalistic.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying here that a person shouldn't tell jokes.
No, I understand.
On the contrary, people need to laugh. But if a person's telling a joke because people need to laugh, because laughing is very helpful, it's very healthy to laugh, so then that's fine. Tell the jokes. Okay, but if a person's doing it as a self-interest of self-serving, look how wonderful I am because I know this joke.
How witty I am.
So then it becomes part of, it becomes a tool for the Sitra Achra.
Yeah.
V'kein, I'll take one more step. V'kein b'hir v'hurim machshavta afilu b'mat mezerd. And so too also, when it comes to like daydreaming and fantasizing, getting lost in one's thoughts where they shouldn't be. There's a saying that I heard, treat your mind like a bad neighborhood, never go into it alone. You know, so.
That's pretty good, yeah.
You don't like that one, huh? Anyway, so the person says, you know, I could be thinking this thought, but I decided I'm not going to think that thought anymore. That thought's not for me. Yeah. The fact that this is just a thought. Yeah. The guy is saying he's not thinking about doing it. He's just thinking about it. And it's never going to get out of the realm of thought. He's never going to tell anybody what he's thinking about. And he's just thinking about it and he decides, you know, this is not the right thing for me to be thinking. I don't think, I'm not going to think this anymore.
Right.
So what did he just do? He just exerted control. He just did iskafia. What does Hashem do when a person does even just a minute amount of iskafia? Because you're talking about the infinite and it is of Hashem. The word minute is irrelevant to Hashem. This guy exerted effort in controlling himself. And it says, when a person controls himself, the glory of Hashem is elevated throughout the whole spectrum of creation. There's no quantity put there. However much a person did, it's going to cause this elevation in the revelations of godliness. And so we're back to the beginning of chapter 27. So what's this guy complaining about?
Right.
Even if he's just doing it for 5 seconds, it's 5 seconds. 10 seconds is better than 5 seconds. But the 5 seconds that he's doing is causing a tremendous nachas to Hashem for those 5 seconds. And don't beat himself up that after the 5 seconds he gave in. Look what he did for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
If a person does it just a little bit down here, then Hashem's glory is elevated a lot. And then, when a person is sanctifying himself in this way, sanctifying means to remove yourself from the mundane.
Right.
When he does that, he's causing the Kedusha from above, Hashem's Kedusha, which is a true removal from the mundane and the profane, to be drawn down upon us. Not on him, but on us. Because this is making the whole world better. Because what's the world created for? To make a dwelling place for Hashem. And by the person controlling himself, guess what he's doing? He's making a dwelling place for Hashem. And he's not making just a dwelling place for himself. Because he's making a dwelling place for the entire world. Because once Hashem is down here now in this space, so Hashem's down here in this space for everybody. And then what happens is that makes it easier. The Yosef always tells us this line. It says it in Shulchan Aruch someplace. I'm not exactly sure where else. It says in all the, a lot of Musar books. It says a person has a problem waking up. So what should he should do? He should resolve to wake up at a certain time 3 times in a row. Okay? I need to wake up at 6 a.m. Okay? So what happens is the snooze button goes off 3-4 times and I finally get up. Okay, so in the meantime, it was 45 minutes that I'm, whatever. So the person should resolve, when the alarm clock goes off, I'm going to get out of bed. Do it 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and he says, the 4th day will be already habitual. You won't have any problems. For this, I can respond to a famous Yiddish expression, anechtike tug is the expression. Okay, I have my biggest... test is the snooze button. And as many times as I've resolved, I'm going to get up, I'm not going to hit the snooze button, I'll do it 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, comes day 5,
right.
Gone. Okay? So, it's true that if a person will accustom himself to doing good things all the time, it makes it easier. And he says over here, if a person keeps on doing it, so what will happen is the person will say, okay, 5 seconds I didn't do it. Okay, let's see if I can stretch that out to 9. Okay, 10 is already too long, but I'll make it 9. Okay, get used to doing it 9 seconds. And then what happens after that, he says, okay, you know, I'm going to move it up to 14, 13. I'm going to control myself for 13 seconds. Okay, so eventually what's going to happen is he'll just, it says that the nature will be such that he'll be controlling himself. And how does that come from? It's because every effort that a person puts forth, so Hashem gives him back a little revelation of godliness. And this is a very interesting point. It says, that the glory of God is elevated throughout the spectrum of creation. That means that there's greater revelations of godliness throughout the whole spectrum of creation, from bottom to top. And this is supposed to help the guy. Okay, so let me ask you. You open up the refrigerator, you open up the freezer, and you see the pint of chocolate ice cream over there. Mm-hmm. And you say, no, I'm not eating it. And you close it. Do you suddenly get this tremendous flash of godly revelation? Ta-da! That makes it all worth it? Yeah, godliness. Yeah. No. And if you did, then you can sit here and I'll sit there.
Indeed.
Okay? But there's an interesting thing. You know, there's an age-old question, one of those really stupid epistemological questions that if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, does it make a noise?
Yes.
And the answer is very simply, of course.
Yes, it does.
It's not even a question. Of course it makes a noise. Nobody heard it. You mean you say, you didn't hear it. And the answer to you didn't hear it is an old Yiddish expression, verbis du, who do you think you are?
Exactly.
Do you have to hear it for it to exist? Yeah. No. So this is the same thing also with revelations of godliness. You have a person controls himself for 5 seconds. And there's this tremendous revelation of godliness and he didn't see it. So that means the revelation didn't exist? No, the revelation is there. So you can say, so what good is it if a revelation is there and I don't see it? So we have the expression, Afal pi de lo chaza mazlai uchazi. Is there a reference to like Hanina Mishal Nazari, Hanina Mishal Nazari, that you don't see it? Good, your mazel sees it. The part of your neshama which is not contained by your body sees it. That's the part that's beyond your conscious. And that's the part that's going to say, you know what? I did it today, and I was able to control myself. Now I got this charge, I got this revelation, and so I'll do it a little bit more tomorrow. That's where that's coming from. Okay, and indeed, you are perceiving it, and a person does feel the revelation, even though if you'd ask him, well, do you feel any different? Okay? And the answer is, well, maybe it's just slight. You know, it's like when you have your kids, you know, and you can watch your kids grow. Mm-hmm. Okay? You don't see any change from one day to the next. Somebody comes who hasn't seen them, and you go see your nephew, you haven't seen in 2 years. And suddenly the nephew is like his big bean sprout over there going on. Yeah. And it's like, whoa, what's this? Okay? Because that's what happens. That's the way that's the way we improve.
Right.
To the point where you're not going to see changes because you're looking at yourself on a daily basis. You see every single day how you are, and today it looks just like yesterday. But if you were to think and analyze, well, what was today compared to, say, 5 years ago? I think most people would say, hopefully, that in 5 years they've definitely improved. And where's that improvement coming from? That improvement is not coming specifically from their own powers, but it's coming from this divine revelation that the neshama is picking up on. In addition to the fact, so he gets sanctified. In addition to what there's a positive commandment that says he's kaddish and v'tiyu kaddish, that you should sanctify yourself and be holy. Meaning, we're 3 lines from the bottom. When a person sanctifies himself, removes himself from things that are permitted to him. How is a person going to be holy by not eating pig? No. A Jew who doesn't eat pig is not holy. He's doing the commandment. That's fine. That's normal. That's called a normal Jew. Okay? What is it that a person going to become holy? Is if he goes the extra bit. Even though it's true that he's not really separated and removed from the Sitra Achra, because the Sitra Achra is in its power and in its might, in its birth like he was the day he was born. It's just lodged right in there in the left side of his heart. Rakshakai Vish Yitzro Mekadashashna. What did he do? He conquered his Yetzirhara and he sanctified himself. The word Mekadash, like an Ish Mekudeshith. I've said that when a person gets married, so the woman is now dedicated to this one person, separated from the rest of the world. Mm. She's Mekadesh. Mm-hmm. So to also now, the person is Mekadesh Atzmai, he sanctifies himself, he's separating himself from the realm of the mundane, mm-hmm. and putting himself into a realm of holiness. The Yisim Kedoshim, the Pasuk continues, you know what's going to happen if you do all that? If a person goes through the motions, he'll be holy. Mm. On this point, somebody came to the Alter Rebbe, the author, and said, your Hasidim are a bunch of fakers. Mm. He says, what are you talking? What are you talking about? Bunch of fakers. And he said, they're pretending to be holy. Mm. So the Alter Rebbe said, wonderful. Says, what's so wonderful? The guy was taken aback with such a response. What do you mean, wonderful? They're faking. You know, faking's not good. Tamim tiyui masham alokecha. You should always be pure with God and not put up a front. Taicha kebara, your inside should be like your outside. There's all kinds of expressions. It talks about that a person's not supposed to fake. And here the Alter Rebbe is saying, good. And the Alter Rebbe quoted him in Mishnah. It says that if a person pretends to be lame or blind for the purpose of collecting tzedakah, so then it's guaranteed that he will die lame or blind. Mm. So he says, my chassidim are faking that they're holy? Good. So that's a guarantee that they're not going to die until they actually become holy. Mm. Okay, I'm not going to be an advocate of the philosophy of fake it till you make it, but he says, v'yisim kedoshim, a person will actually be holy. If a person, every time they go to the fridge, stops for 5 seconds and thinks, why do I need to eat this? This guy is a holy dude. Okay? Even if it's just for 5 seconds. Kalaimer Saifali as Kaddish Umuvdal Be'emes Mesitra Achra. The end will be that if a person goes through these motions and practices, you know, you don't just get to be a Segovia because you picked up a guitar. Uh-huh. You know, it takes a lot of work.
A little practice.
And Segovia wasn't able to do it either by just picking up a guitar when he was 5 years old. Yeah. Okay, it took a lot of work, and every day is another day until a person becomes a master. That's why the Alter Rebbe loved the expression Baal Tshuva. When the times of the Mittler of the Mezritcher Magid, the students of the Mezritcher Magid were simply referred to as the Kat Hayidua, the cult. Basically, Kat means the group. Okay, they didn't really have a name for themselves. They didn't know what to call themselves. The Alter Rebbe wanted to call his Talmidim Bali Tshuva. But what happened is the ban in Shklov, the way they wrote it, formulated and wrote it up, so they have that they called this group that they were against, they called the people the Chassidim. And they referred to themselves as the Misnagdim. Chassidim meaning the pious ones, and Misnagdim meaning the opposition. So the Alter Rebbe said, I really want to call my Talmidim Bali Tshuva. But it's Ashkacha Pratis that since they, the opposition, are calling themselves the opposition, and they're calling us the pious ones, because it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They should call themselves the pious ones, and the cult, they should call them the Misnagdim. Mm-hmm. We're doing what we're supposed to be doing, and you guys are opposing to us. Okay? Not that you guys are pious, and we're in opposition to it. Okay, so since that was the case, so the Alter Rebbe said, okay, fine, we'll call our Talmidim will be called Chassidim. Mm. But it doesn't take away from the idea, the concept of a Baal Tshuva. What's so special about a Baal Tshuva? What does the word Baal mean?
Master.
So this is like you tell people, you know, Tshuva? Yeah, I've done it 100 times. I'm a master at it. I've done it 100 times. Okay, because in actuality, that's really what it is every time we take a step, so there's like another step back. But the person's still going, still taking that step. Okay, so that if every little bit that a person does, he becomes a Baal Tshuva. He says, listen, I know now I'm going to have a deal. I know I mucked up, I took my half a step back, so I have to do Tshuva, which is going to propel him to take another full step forward. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it'll be this constant thing that's going on. And he'll be Vayisim Kedoshim, he'll be holy. And I said, Al Yidei Shemekashin Oisei Harbi Milamayla. How so? He's taking baby steps, or what in his mind is a big step. What happens? He gets carried along from above. Ligarsha Maliba Ma'at Ma'at. So that the evil is driven away. Very strong verbiage there. The evil is driven away, not coaxed, cajoled, pushed, driven out of his left side of his heart.
Driven away.
Means sounds what? So that hopefully after 120 years, the guy, after controlling himself for like 120 years, there should be some inroads into his Yetzirah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even take 120 years. Because what's the job of the Yetzer Hara? The job of the Yetzer Hara is to get a person to stumble in their Avodas Hashem.
Mm.
And even just a little stumble is still a major victory for the Yetzer Hara.
Mm.
And the Yetzer Hara is not going to waste its time saying, you know, let's go for the kill. Okay? And the person's going to wake up one morning and he's going to say, you know, I feel like becoming a Baptist. It doesn't.
Good idea.
It doesn't work that way. It's not the way our Yetzer Haras work. Because what's going to happen? A person's going to wake up in the morning and say, "You know, I feel like becoming a Baptist," and he's going to say to himself, "No, I don't. There's no way I want to become a Baptist. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever thought."
Episcopalian, maybe. No.
Which is the ones that don't dance. The Baptists don't dance, right? Yeah, Baptists don't dance. No, I don't want to be one of those guys, you know. It's not the way Yetzer Hara works. I guess you don't have to worry about that type of a thing. But the Yetzer Hara works in ways that the Yetzer Hara knows that it's going to be able to get in there.
For example,
every time that the guy controls the Yetzer Hara,
right.
What is the Yetzer Hara now going to fight himself? He says, man, this guy can control me. I can't get him the way normal way. I'm going to have to do a back door. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put this thought in his head. How long do I have to keep controlling myself? Man, I'm not doing such a good job. I really could be such a better person. I'm going to be depressed.
Right.
Bingo. Yetzer Hara says, hey, man, I won. Ha ha. Okay? So, and a person always has to be on guard. Person has to always see, like, what kind of trick is the Yetzer Hara going to pull up with next? Okay? Because what happens now is with everything that a person does, there is a refinement. Every time a person does a mitzvah, every time a person davens, every time a person gives tzedakah, every time a person does a good deed, every time a person exhibits some kind of self-control in his thought, speech, and in action, there is a refinement of the animal soul, and the animal soul is less of a vilde chaya. Will it ever be that the person will take his vilde chaya and turn it into a little shepsel? Not necessarily. But who says that you have to turn your goring ox into a sheep?
At least I can pull the teeth out of the line, maybe.
With a goring ox? No, you don't want to do that either. With a goring ox, what do? Is you put a heavy yoke on its neck, and you stick it up to a plow, and it says, Rav Tvua Bekeh Shur. A lot of grain comes to the strength of an ox. So we're not going to tell the guy, and I told him, you can't. We used to have this whole discussion in Morristown when I was there. The guys would become from, they didn't know what to do. Yeah. I have a certain nature, and my nature just says that I act a certain way. This is the way I was taught, this is the way I was raised, this is my disposition. So what now? Keep it. There's nothing says that a person has to become milquetoast. And if a person's a shy, quiet type of guy,
Edel
and refined, God gives it to hate, that's fine. Let him use the ale and refineness now for serving Hashem. Right. But if a guy's a bulvana boor, of course, whatever, mm-hmm. a real the word in Yiddish is called a cheverman, mm-hmm. you know, a guy who's every place and everywhere and bubbly and gregarious, so he doesn't have to become refined. He doesn't have to be sit there with idle and unmoving.
Use his strength.
Then. He's got an animal that's got him hopping all over the place. This other guy, he's got a yetzahara like a sheep. Yeah. So that's who's in control of that. Well, that's what God decided.
Yeah.
So he says he doesn't have to make himself into a sheep. He could be a wild ox.
Right.
It's just control himself, and it'll be even better than it was before.
Right. Good turn.
Okay, and if you want something done, who are you going to ask? The little Edel guy, or are you going to ask the guy who's
right.
showing tremendous energy?
Yeah.
To be continued.
Shkara. Very good. Very good.